listening to the AHDB podcast, farming news and stories from across the UK.
Hello and welcome to this AHDB podcast. My name's Scott Raffle. I'm a knowledge exchange manager for fruit at the AHDB. And this afternoon, we are talking all things research on fruit crops, soft fruit crops and tree fruit crops. And with me to have a chat about this today, we've got my colleague Rachel McGauley, who's our research manager for fruit crops. We've got Harriet Duncalf, who's a long-established grower in the soft fruit industry and now works very closely on a number of research projects. And we have Nigel Kitney, a tree fruit grower, ex-tree fruit panel chairman and agronomist in the tree fruit industry. I should also have mentioned that Harriet also has been a past chairman of our AHDB soft fruit panel. So a very warm welcome to you all. I think we're going to talk spotted wing Drosophila to begin with, because this is a pest which has affected both soft fruit and tree fruit. And AHDB and others have funded quite a significant amount of research onto this pest. And in recent times, we've done work on monitoring the pest, explaining to growers and guiding them on how to monitor for it, how to dispose of affected fruit, how to manage it, how to gain control of it, and so on. Rachel, you're quite excited about some of the ongoing research. Which bits do you think are of most interest?
Hi, Scott. Yeah, thanks. I'm really excited about the SWD project at the moment. It feels like we're about to turn a corner in being able to make the most of the research that we've been funding. So as you said, we've been funding research on monitoring for the past 8 years now. And we're now starting to make the most of this data. So we've got a huge wealth of data, and we're going to be using this to model. So using environmental conditions, we can predict things like when there are going to be fecund females around. So these are the egg laying females. So this is the most important stage that we want to look for. This is important in terms of crop protection, because you want to start spraying at these times. We're using this data as well to predict when we're going to have peaks in trap catches and things. I'm also really excited because we've been doing some work on bait sprays. So we've been using things like Combi Protect and molasses. So molasses in particular, I'm excited about, because it's less than 20% of the cost of using normal crop protection sprays. And it uses a 96% reduction in insecticides, but gives the same control with the flies. We're also doing quite a lot of research to develop a push-pull system. So this is where you use repellents within the crop to push the flies away, and then attractants to attract them towards some kind of killing device. And we've done some quite exciting research on this, and we've developed some repellents that are really starting to work for that. We're also looking at different life stages with the flies. So we think that targeting the winter stage and reducing the numbers that are overwintering can be a useful tool in our armoury. So if we can reduce the numbers going into the spring, then you're delaying the build-up of the population. So we're using techniques such as precision monitoring, so using quite a lot of traps in woodlands to catch and kill the flies.
Okay, so lots going on, and it's quite exciting. Very different approach for controlling pests to what growers are perhaps used to. Harriet, as a soft fruit grower of the past, you know, how excited are you about these, and which do you think which of these could growers adopt, do you think, in the near future?
Yeah, Scott, I'm really excited about what this tranche has delivered. Precision monitoring year-round, as Rachel says, hopefully will reduce the population through the winter, which obviously will then allow less flies to end up in the crop in the spring. The push-pull system is being done by Christina Conroy, who's a PhD student. That's really excellent work. And bait sprays, I think, are very exciting as well. The modelling, which predicts the fecundity of WD and the peak of the populations during the season, is also shaping up to look really useful for growers.
Do you think, Harriet, that growers would they be happy to adopt this sort of alternative approach to control?
I think they definitely will, Scott. Obviously, you know, we don't have many crop protection products for SWD, and so this sort of work is so important.
Nigel, I'd like to draw you in on this at the moment as well, because you look at things with a tree fruit hat on. Cherries is perhaps one of the most susceptible crops to SWD. And we have at AHDB delivered a large number of emergency authorisations for growers to control SWD in cherries. I think that's worked well for them. How excited should cherry growers be to have an alternative control option available to them?
Well, I mean, as you rightly said, cherries are particularly attractive to the SWD. And the work that's been done has basically enabled cherry growing to carry on. Without it, the industry would have been totally devastated. These new bait sprays are very exciting, and the growers have already started to adopt the use of Bee Protect in order to both improve the efficiency of the kill of the pesticides, but also to reduce the actual amount of active ingredient use. So there's been a benefit in both directions. And yes, we are totally dependent upon the emergency clearances that the AHDB has helped the industry to secure. As I said before, without these, there would be no cherry industry left. Management by trapping alone would not be sufficient to keep a viable industry going. We need to be using all of these methods in order to achieve adequate control.
Okay, so growers reasonably pleased that we've managed to gain these authorisations for them, but there is even more hope in the future with the development and emergence of some of these new opportunities. Let's move this topic on to powdery mildew. And the reason I suggest moving it on to mildew is because mildew affects both tree fruit in the case of apples and soft fruit, particularly strawberries. And in the case of strawberries, particularly under protected cropping systems where the conditions are very often conducive to mildew. AHDB has been doing quite a lot of work in recent years developing a risk model which tells growers what the risk of infection is likely to be. Growers who have used this can then work out whether or not they need to spray. Rachel, we've been doing quite a lot of research in this area for a few years, haven't we? What have we achieved with this work?
Yeah, so as you said, we've been funding work into the risk model for quite a few years, but just recently it's been demonstrated kind of on growers' sites that it actually works. So it's been really exciting. So if you use the risk model, it looks at the environmental conditions and then gives you a risk rating. So it'll tell you if you're in a period of high risk, and this is a time when that you'll need to use plant protection products. But also, possibly more usefully, it tells you when you're in a no risk or a low risk period and when you can save money and not use the plant protection products. So this, as I said, this has been actually used on growers' sites now, and it's working. We've had some fantastic results and reductions in the use of pesticides. And then similarly, on apples, we've been looking, as you say, at powdery mildew, apple powdery mildew, and we've been looking at complementing the use of conventional plant protection products with less conventional products, such as things that are going to make the trees healthier. And we found that if you use an alternating program, so that you'll use a 7-day program still, but in 1 week you'll use a conventional product, and then in the second week you'll use a plant strengthener, then you get equal control of your apple powdery mildew.
So I think the message for both those crops is that there is potential scope to reduce the reliance on our conventional fungicides and rely on some alternatives, or indeed reduce the number. Let's draw in our expert growers now. Harriet, again, I'll come to you first. I understand and believe that you actually were involved with some of the original research on this model, and you tested it on your farm, this powdery mildew risk model for strawberry. Did it work for you, and how effective was it?
Yes, Scott, we were great supporters of the powdery mildew prediction system. And have used it as a tool in the box to very successfully gain control of powdery mildew season long in strawberry. Growers who haven't had an opportunity to use it, you should do. It's easy to use, and at the very least, if you follow the predictions to understand what your mildew risk is, low, medium or high, and how it's building, this helps focus your mind on mildew in busy periods, makes it much easier to keep on top of it. But it's a great tool.
Okay, well, growers out there listening to this may be interested that AHDB did produce a fact sheet on this very topic, fact sheet 2916, entitled Control of Strawberry Powdery Mildew Under Protection. It gives you a lot of advice and guidance on this very subject, so please do refer to that. You can search for that on our AHDB website. But it is actually being used actively by a number of growers, this risk model, across the UK. And it's also been employed at the Wet Centre at NIAB MR, which is a strategic centre that AHDB is involved with, which has demonstrated this in practice. So great prospects for reducing fungicide use in strawberry. Nigel, on the apple front, which Rachel mentioned just now, again, potential scope to reduce fungicide use. Are you, as an agronomist, are you confident to rely on this information? Do you feel it's a real feasibility that we can employ alternative products to our conventional fungicides?
Well, I think in the case of tree fruit, we're particularly complicated in that a lot of the time the products that we are using are dual purpose and we're controlling apple scab and mildew together. So we do have to sort of bear that in mind. But certainly, I think there is a huge opportunity to use these products either in a background situation so that we have this background of a healthier tree. So if, for instance, the scab risk went into a period of a very low scab risk and we had these products had strengthened the plant, then we may be able to, at that point, reduce or even eliminate a mildew spray for a spray round and then come back in with a scab mildew product as a second date. I mean, it's a fantastic tool to have to our in our armoury. It does become complicated to use, but with the reduction in the number of products available in crop protection at the moment, I think this is going to be absolutely imperative that we do take hold of this information and put it into practice. The skill is going to be actually making it work on the farms in question.
Nigel, as an agronomist in the industry, active in the industry, I'm sure you and all your agronomy colleagues will do all you can to try and ensure the uptake of that. Let's hope that that continues to move at pace in the industry. Those of you listening may be thinking all of this is crop protection research. We do other forms of research, but the lion's share of what we do is on crop protection because growers want us to do crop protection research. It's the number one priority for us, so they tell us regularly. So sticking with crop protection, we've talked about mildew, we've talked about spotted wing Drosophila. There are a number of other key pests and diseases out there which tax growers every year. Western flower thrips is one of those on strawberry. And again, AHDB has done a huge amount of research on this over a period of probably a decade or more now. Rachel, most recently we've done some work as a part of a five-year IPM project, SF156. What excited you in that project?
So as you say, we've done quite a lot of work on Western flower thrips and using Neocelis curcumaris to control it, as well as aureus and the different coloured traps that are successful in that. With Western flower thrips, I think we've now really got the handle on using bioprotectants for this, possibly as a result of necessity. The thing that I'm most concerned about with Western flower thrips is the invasion of other thrip species. So in our new soft fruit IPM pests programme, we're now looking to see how we can keep control of the Western flower thrips, like maintain control of that, but also control the other thrip species that are coming in. So we're doing quite a lot of research to understand the biology of these other thrips and the life stages that we need to target and ways that we can target these as well as controlling the Western flower thrips.
So there's a lot of good work going on. In terms of the Western flower thrips, Harriet, we did actually fund a project a few years ago where we employed an agronomist, Claire Sampson, of Keele University at the time, to actually visit growers where they were getting successful control of Western flower thrips with Neocelis curcumaris, and those who weren't getting such good control. And she actually highlighted the significant differences there. As a result of that work, how much have strawberry growers adopted this research?
As you know, Western flower thrips can be a very damaging pest. And that work done by HDB was definitely taken up and has been taken up very successfully. I think the latest bit of work on the monitoring and sampling is also another really good piece of work and will allow growers to understand the pest-predator relationship in the crop. And that also in turn helps refine the timing of the introductions of Cucumis and aureus to gain better control of this pest. So I think such a lot of good work has been done here. I think that you know, the majority of growers are now well on top if they get their timings right.
Yeah, I think this is the thing that excites me so much about all of this work that we've been chatting about today, is that not just does it deliver some good results, but there is the prospect of adoption by the industry. And very often with research that we've done in the past and others as well, we get interesting results, but it doesn't necessarily translate into practice in the field. But I think a lot of this is, if it hasn't yet been adopted, it is going to be adopted. Let's switch the talk to tree fruit, Nigel, again. Codling moth and Tortrix moth are major problems for apple growers. And we have been looking at alternatives to conventional crop protection products for those pests. Most recently, in an IPM project on tree fruit, we've looked at a thing called RAK3+4, which is a mating disruption system in apples for those pests. That worked quite successfully in the trials. Is there scope for growers to start using that, or are they already using it?
Well, Scott, I mean, it's a very interesting product. I think it's been on the market now for 3 years. And shall we say there's been a limited uptake, sadly, primarily due to price, because it is rather more expensive than the current crop protection products that we've had. Now, sadly, two of those crop protection products are in their final year of use up now. So that may actually encourage a bit more uptake. I've used it myself for two seasons, and it certainly doesn't eliminate damage entirely, but it would be at least as good as normal insecticide use. So, yeah, and that's ultimately what we're looking for. And the real benefit, in my mind, is that we're not killing any beneficial insects by doing this. Usually with insecticides, there is some casualties in the beneficial lines. So this is really prominent. And in actual fact, this could be more important in the future, because the only insecticide that we're going to have left for use, or at least for purchase and use from now on, are going to be either pyrethroids or indoxacarb in Explicit or Stuart. And both of those are damaging in one way or another to beneficial insects. So in the absence of clearance of new products, RAK3 or 4 is really the way forward. Now, the one exception, I must say, Scott, is that if you are a farm that suffers from blastabasis, this product will not control blastabasis. Now, that's a caterpillar that is particularly damaging on short-stalked varieties of apples, and it gets into that cavity around the stalk and munches away. And if you do not apply an insecticide on those farms, you will get damage. So you do need to know your farm. So very good product. The research that was done has helped to push us in the right direction, and we could see a much greater increase if the demand of conventional insecticides carries on.
Yeah, and I think the research results, Rachel, I think from this showed that it was successful where the numbers of codling moth were not very, very high. Where numbers were extremely high, then it was clear from the research that something, another product maybe needed to be used. But we're also very aware at AHDB of the blastabasis issue, so that there is potentially more work that we can do on that. Is that right, Rachel?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, yeah, any other Lepidoptera aren't controlled by this. It's very specific. And with the blastabasis, I think we found the female sex pheromone, but we weren't successful in using it. So, yes, more research is needed.
Yeah. the search goes on. I think that's the thing about research, isn't it? You solve one problem, but you find you create another one. But rest assured, Rachel and all our colleagues at AHDB continue to be made aware of these problems, and we commission new projects regularly to try and address these problems. Two-spotted spider mite is another problem, a major problem for soft fruit growers, particularly for raspberry growers, and has been in recent times. We have been doing a cane fruit IPM project for the last 5 years, and that project has addressed this pest. Rachel, some other useful biocontrol news from that, I think, too.
Yeah, so as part of this, we've been looking at the biocontrols, Phytoselus persimilis and Amblycinus andersoni. And we've been experimenting with adding Nutrimite, so pollen, in to see if we can improve efficacy. Because Phytoselus particularly is very specific predator, and it needs something else to eat when the numbers of the two-spotted spider mite drop. But we have, from our results, found that Amblycinus andersoni got a greater temperature range, and because it predates more than two-spotted spider mites, it's got a better survival rate. And we've also found, excitingly, that it can overwinter on the crop, so it's there really early in the next season and are ready to start acting. Amblycinus, we've also found, tends to be more tolerant of plant protection sprays, and you can buy it commercially, but it's also available naturally in the crop.
Yeah, so I think the work that it was Jude Benison and her colleagues at ADAS did on this very much showed that Amblycinus andersoni is another tool in the armoury, if you like, and can complement Phytoselus persimilis. Harriet, as a grower of soft fruit and raspberries in the past, how useful is it to have a predator that might actually overwinter and start again in the new year?
Oh, it's incredibly important, Scott. This whole piece of work is really, really useful because, as you know, keeping on top of spider is really important before you have to use your SWD sprays. So if you're right on top of your spider up until that point, actually you then see very little damage going through the rest of the season. Whereas if you can't be on top of it, you've got problems. So I think the piece of work is really, really useful. And the combination of the two predators and their timings and temperature requirements, I think that's a really excellent piece of work.
I think the key to two-spotted spider mite, of course, is monitoring. Like all pests, it's monitoring from start to finish of the season, so that you can make the introductions at the right time. Monitoring is a common theme also in tree fruit. I just wanted to pick up on pear sucker, Nigel, because in the tree fruit industry, that has been a major headache for pear growers over many years. And again, previous AHDB research has by NIAB MR has identified a whole lot of new management techniques that we can employ to attract beneficial insects in, which will control pear sucker. All sorts of things, anthocorus and earwigs, can feed on them, and growers have actually been attracted or advised to plant attractant species, so things like hawthorn, hazel, willow, and even stinging nettles all help to attract these into orchards. Particularly piece of work that we've done on pear sucker has been looking at counting the numbers of sucker eggs and also the number of beneficial insects within an orchard. I know IRBMR have employed a 6 or 7 commercial growers where they've actually trained them to do this. And I understand that actually allows you then, if you've got a certain number of beneficials in there and below a certain threshold of eggs, you can avoid spraying altogether. Is that a practical thing for growers to do?
Perhaps this is a slightly disappointing one. It does really require a farm where you are prepared to put the effort in. So it is quite labour intensive. So that's the first comment. We have been able to get very good results, but sadly now with the pesticide range we've got a serious problem in that we have no control. The only control we have now is Batavia, and you're really having to apply that earlier on in the season before you've had a major outbreak. because by the time you've had an outbreak, the product won't work. So we're in this little bit of a difficult situation where what do we do if the product doesn't work? And I think what we actually need to do is to go back and commission some more research and look at how we can perhaps try and take a leaf out of the soft fruit industry. And in our case, how can we combine introductions of anthocorids with the information that this project produced? Instead of using the project to time sprays, can we use the project to time introductions of beneficial insects and primarily the anthocorids? So this is where I think we need to actually extend the work into the new reality of zero pesticides being available.
Yeah, I think there's certainly no doubt that there's some growers have made this biocontrol system and the use of beneficial insects work successfully, but not everyone has. So it's an ongoing story. We consult with the industry regularly, and we actually only just recently had a meeting with a group of industry agronomists covering all the agronomy groups for both soft fruit and tree fruit. Rachel and I worked with Adam Doxford, our crop protection specialist, gathering up more ideas about ongoing concerns they have with the loss of further approvals. So the search goes on. And as I said earlier, I think one piece of research doesn't always solve all our problems. It can find new problems, but one we continue to strive to find solutions to all of these things. Well, we've had a good chat. I think we've put the world to rights on crop protection fruit research. I'd like to thank you all, because I think your input, particularly Harriet and Nigel, your practical experience and knowledge has been very helpful to us. And we hope those of you out there listening have enjoyed this. There is lots more information about all of these topics on our AHDB website. Spotted winged drosophila, which we mentioned at the top of the programme, has a huge amount of information. We have a dedicated web page with all of that information on it. You just need to search on the AHDB website. There is information on a whole range of other topics on the AHDB website. So it's ahdb.org.uk/horticulture, and you will find a soft fruit page and a tree fruit page with a whole range of information on there. So do take time to have a look at it. Nigel, Harriet, Rachel, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon, for sharing your knowledge and information, and we look forward to speaking to you soon.
You're listening to the AHDB podcast, practical know-how to help your farm business.